Today is Friday, July 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo spoke out strongly against China in remarks Thursday.
The old paradigm of blind engagement with China simply won't get it done.
Plus, the U.S. Department of Justice says it will look into the actions of federal officers in Portland, Oregon, and Washington, D.C.
Local authorities in both cities have complained the presence of federal agents has exacerbated tensions in the streets.
And our second part on the effects the pandemic is having on children. We'll have those stories and more next. Four decades after the United States established diplomatic ties with communist China, the relationship between the two is at a turning point. Tensions have reached new heights as the ambitions of a rising superpower increasingly clash with those of the established one. China ordered the closing of the U.S. consulate in the southwestern city of Chengdu on Friday in rapid retaliation for the closing of its consulate in Houston, Texas. 2 weeks ago, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi asked aloud if relations could stay on track. On Thursday, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo delivered an answer, saying that the time has come to change course. The secretary delivered that message remarks at the Nixon Library in Southern California, and VOA's Elizabeth Lee brings us that story.
At the Nixon Library in Southern California, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo presents the Trump administration's hardline stance on China.
The old paradigm of blind engagement with China simply won't get it done. We must not continue it, and we must not return to it. As President Trump has made very clear, we need a strategy that protects the American economy and indeed our way of life. The free world must triumph over this new tyranny.
Pompeo says the old way of engaging with China resulted in self-censorship among U.S. businesses and in Hollywood, while China continues with repression on the Chinese mainland and Hong Kong. He says China is seeking global dominance and has become increasingly authoritarian at home and hostile to freedom abroad. Pompeo's speech comes the same week the U.S. ordered the Chinese consulate in Houston to close within 72 hours, calling it a hub of spying and intellectual property theft.
This is entirely malicious slander. This demolishes the bridge of friendship between Chinese and America.
The only way to truly change communist China is to act not on the basis of what Chinese leaders say, but how they behave. And you can see American policy responding to this conclusion. President Reagan said that he dealt with the Soviet Union on the basis of trust but verify. When it comes to the CCP, I say we must distrust and verify.
It is not surprising that the U.S. is taking a tougher approach on China, says the RAND Corporation's China expert, Timothy Heath.
That there is a long-term trend that's been going on since President Bush, George Bush Jr., of a gradual hardening of America's position regarding China. And I think ultimately that derives from the reality that the gap in national power is narrowing, that there is a real competition going on.
I call on
Pompeo is asking other nations to also hold China accountable, but it may not be that simple.
A lot of countries are dependent or at least rely a lot on trade with China. And so it's not going to be easy for many countries in the world to, you know, so-called pick a side and join the U.S. in some of its harder line policies.
Heath says there is bipartisan support for a harder line on China, especially on specific issues such as intellectual property theft and China's approach to Hong Kong, which may be an indicator as to what will happen after the November presidential elections.
President candidate Joe Biden has voiced a very tough line on China, echoing, again, quite a bit of bipartisan concern about China. So I anticipate, regardless of who wins the election, there will be a lot of what you see from the Trump administration will continue.
The question remains to be seen whether this approach will be more successful than what was tried with other administrations. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Now to take a deeper look into what may be next for U.S.-Sino relations, I spoke with RAND Corporation's senior international defense researcher, Timothy Heath.
Tensions are likely to continue to grow, not decline. So I think the latest closure of the consulate in Chengdu is just one more salvo in this tit-for-tat escalation that doesn't show any sign of easing anytime soon.
Are there any kinds of situations that those around the world who listen to this program should be keeping an eye on? Because China is very involved not only in Southeast Asia, but also Africa, and there's also been some increased tensions over Taiwan and the South China Sea.
Yeah, so I think for the short term, keeping an eye on Chinese purchases of U.S. agricultural products will be a really key indicator of how much China is trying to exercise restraint in this escalating tit-for-tat. Currently, it looks like Beijing is being, you could say, dragged along in this confrontation. It, on the one hand, really doesn't want an escalation and wants to see a return to some level of stability, partly, in large part, to re-engineer, reinvigorate economic growth. But on the other hand, Chinese leaders know they cannot afford to appear weak in the face of these restrictions and this confrontational rhetorical assault launched by the U.S. authorities. So they are responding in a tit-for-tat way, but they are still keeping open the possibility of de-escalation. One important sign of that is this continued willingness to carry out these agricultural purchases, which was kind of a goodwill gesture agreed to early on. My guess is the Chinese are going to be in a wait-and-see pattern through the U.S. election. That's still 3 or 4 months away, but I expect they will do the minimum to respond to the U.S. in a tit-for-tat fashion, and they are hoping to get clarity as to whether this behavior by the U.S. is either a ploy by President Trump to shore up his election prospects, or if it's a sign that the U.S. government, regardless of who gets elected next November, intends to carry out a full-on hostile policy towards China.
That was Timothy Heath, RAND Corporation's senior international defense researcher. And coming up later in the program,
for a lot of kids that are older, there's a tremendous sense of loss. I think about one young man I work with who's just graduated high school. His senior year was very important to him, and it was sort of like a time to enjoy being with his friends. And kids that age in particular often have an acute sense of unfairness, and it really feels unfair, right? He was working hard. He was doing everything right. And a very important part of his life was taken from him.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA is preparing to launch its newest Mars rover, Perseverance, to the Red Planet. Its scheduled launch is currently set for July 30th. According to NASA, the rover contains a suite of state-of-the-art instruments that will look into the Red Planet's ancient history for not only clues of a habitable environment, but for indications of past microbial life. Perseverance also contains two microphones to capture the sounds of Mars. According to the Planetary Society, one will pick up the sounds of the spacecraft as it makes its way through the Martian atmosphere to its landing spot in the Jezero crater, while the second microphone will record sounds as the rover performs mission tasks on the surface of Mars. If all goes according to plan, not only will we be able to see Mars, but also hear for the first time the sounds of the Red Planet as well. Well, I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The U.S. Justice Department Inspector General says it will review the conduct of federal agents who responded to unrest in the northwestern U.S. city of Portland, Oregon, and Washington, D.C. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has more.
Local authorities in both cities have complained the presence of federal agents has exacerbated tensions in the streets. In Portland, Mayor Ted Wheeler has been among those tear-gassed, and federal agents have been accused of whisking people away in unmarked cars without probable cause. In Washington, investigators will look at the training and instruction provided to agents who responded to protest activity at Lafayette Square near the White House. Among questions are whether the agents followed Justice Department guidelines, including identification requirements, the deployment of chemical agents, and the use of force. Ben Thomas, Washington.
In addition, U.S. District Judge Michael Simon in Oregon issued a temporary restraining order on Thursday. The order prevents federal agents from dispersing, arresting, threatening to arrest, or targeting force against journalists or legal observers at protests. It was the result of a lawsuit filed by the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon. Last week, a video went viral showing unidentified armed federal agents grabbing a man off the streets of Portland and putting him into an unmarked van. Department of Homeland Security Acting Secretary Chad Wolf defended what he termed proactive arrests, while Deputy Director of the Federal Protective Service, Richard Chris Klein, said the incident was legal because it was not a custodial arrest. Amid the outcry over the incident, VOA's Jason Patinkin spoke to Professor Andrew Crespo about the legality of the incident. Crespo teaches criminal law and criminal procedure at Harvard Law School in Massachusetts.
An arrest under the Constitution, at a minimum, and this is clear under our Supreme Court law going back at least till 1979, happens when the police take somebody off of the street, put them in a car, and drive them to a station house or some other government building to question them. That is an arrest. And that's why this is so important, because if they do that to you and then decide to kind of let you out the back door of the station and never really even record it necessarily internally, never charge you, never book you, never take fingerprints, they might not call that an arrest because they might not be counting. Well, how many people did you just maybe put in the back of a van, take into the station house, keep there for, you know, 20 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, and then just let go? They might not be calling that an arrest, but under our Constitution, that's an arrest. And if they don't have probable cause for it, it is illegal.
So the acting Department of Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf tried to justify this by saying it is a, quote, proactive arrest. What does that mean? Is that a real legal justification?
The term proactive arrest or proactive policing, it sort of gives you this image trying to stop crime before it happens sort of thing, arrest people who haven't done anything because you think they're going to. That's the image the phrase proactive policing brings to mind. I actually don't think that is what Secretary Wolf was talking about, because inside the law enforcement community here, the word proactive policing or proactive arrest doesn't mean arresting people who haven't done anything because you think they will. Rather, it means something else that could still be criticized as problematic, but under our law is legal. And what that is arresting people on what you might call a technicality or a more minor offense because you think that they are going to do something more serious, or because you think that they're kind of generally problematic.
So it's like you suspect someone is a drug dealer, but you don't have proof, so you pull them over for speeding or something like that.
Exactly. That's called pretextual policing, and it sometimes falls in with this phrase proactive policing. My guess is that that's what Secretary Wolf had in mind when he was talking about proactive policing. The bigger issue with the press conference is when Deputy Director Klein, who's basically in charge of this sort of beefed up federal presence that now includes not just his own officers, but a bunch of officers from our Border Patrol agency that have been sort of assigned to him. When he says on national TV that taking someone off the street, putting them in a van and driving them away for questioning, when he says, oh, well, that was, quote, not a custodial arrest, that's really problematic, more problematic than the proactive policing phrase, because Director Klein is just wrong. If you take someone off the street, put them in a van, and drive them in for questioning, you have arrested them, and it requires that you have probable cause. Director Klein stood up and said, we didn't have probable cause to take that man off the street who you've all seen in this video.
Andrew Crespo teaches at the Harvard Law School, and he was speaking to VOA's Jason Patinkin. A few days after European leaders agreed on a massive COVID-19 economic recovery package, The European Parliament in Brussels adopted a resolution late Thursday criticizing the 27-nation bloc's next long-term budget proposal. Nicolas Pineau in Paris has more.
Hailed as an historic moment for Europe by many EU leaders, the deal has raised concerns among European lawmakers who slammed its lack of ambition in the context of the economic crisis triggered by the virus. In a speech delivered to the European lawmakers, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen admitted that the seven-year budget deal and a recovery package contains cuts that are, and I quote, a difficult pill to swallow. The recovery fund is a historic move, but long-term EU priorities such as the Green Deal and the digital agenda are put at risk. A final vote on a budget at the EU Parliament is not expected to take place before the end of the year. Nicolas Pinault for VOA News, Paris.
A United States F-15 fighter jet came within visual range of an Iranian passenger aircraft on Thursday. Now, to get the details, I spoke with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb, who was one of the first reporters to break the story.
The spokesman for U.S. Central Command, Navy Captain Bill Urban, has said that an F-15 fighter jet came within visual range of this Iranian passenger aircraft. He was doing, the fighter jet pilot was doing a visual inspection of this aircraft and remained about 1,000 meters away. So if you think of the legal standards when you have to inspect a plane, how close you can get. Normally, international standards say you need to stay further than 300 meters away. So if you're thinking about the Olympics, for example, about one lap around the track is how far away you need to be from a plane. Now, the U.S. fighter jet was about three laps length away from the plane. So plenty of space between the airliner and the fighter jet, according to the U.S. military. However, it appears that the Mahan air passenger plane pilot panicked and initiated some safety procedures, and then that caused confusion on the flight. He lowered his altitude and went back to Beirut.
Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent. The head of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Society says he expects the coronavirus will have a huge impact on migration for years to come. That prediction came as the world saw more than 15.5 million global COVID-19 infections, according to Johns Hopkins University, and more than 633,000 deaths. On Friday, India reported its largest one-day surge of cases in a 24-hour period, some 49,310 cases with 740 deaths. In the U.S., President Donald Trump says the government is ordering more protective equipment and doses of an antiviral drug to deal with a surge in corona cases. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has that story.
At the president's daily virus briefing,
the country is in very good shape, other than if you look south and west, some problems. That'll all work out.
More than 4 million Americans have now been infected. California and Florida reported new daily highs in virus deaths, over 150. The president continues to push for children to return to school for their well-being and
ensuring that parents can go to work and provide for their families.
But due to virus concerns, he's canceled the four nights of the Republican National Convention in Jacksonville, Florida, where he was planning to make his acceptance speech.
To have a big convention is not the right time.
Jackie Quinn, Washington.
The global COVID-19 pandemic continues to create physical, psychological, and social challenges for many people. Children have their own special needs during this time. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Charles Goldstein, formerly assistant clinical professor of child and adolescent psychiatry at the New York University School of Medicine via Zoom. Dr. Goldstein began by talking about the grief many adolescents feel as their schools remain closed and social distancing and mask wearing are now the new normal.
For a lot of kids that are older, there's a tremendous sense of loss. I think about one young man I work with who's just graduated high school. His senior year was very important to him, and it was sort of like a time to enjoy being with his friends. And kids that age in particular often have an acute sense of unfairness, and it really feels unfair, right? He was working hard. He was doing everything right. A very important part of his life was taken from him.
What's a good way for parents to address that?
you know, giving the child space to grieve and also not being pulled down by it. Some parents get very, very caught up in their child's pain to the extent that they then sort of become emotionally stuck.
It's a real conundrum developmentally. Late adolescence is often about breaking away somewhat from one's parents. But during COVID, many young men and women find themselves back in their childhood home with their parents.
It's a real challenge for development that way. I mean, the number of my patients who were college students were sent home during their spring semester. And it's not an uncommon thing for there to be conflict where the parents sort of be more involved in monitoring their children and where are you going and what time you're coming back, you know, and the young adults feeling very frustrated by that, feeling like, hey, I was on my own here in college and doing just fine, and now you're sort of on top of me here, and I don't like that.
I know many kids find refuge online in social media and gaming, etc.
I read recently that since COVID has started, that the screen time for many kids has increased up to 500% because there's not much going on. A lot of them are stuck at home. A lot of them have two working parents, and a lot of them are sort of compensating by getting on the screen.
Do you have any suggestions that parents can use to foster a more balanced approach to screen time?
So I have one family that I work with where they have a boy who is saying that's all he wants to do. And he seems to be kind of more irritable and depressed and not wanting to do anything else. So the family decided that between the hours of 10 a.m. and 5 p.m., there would just be no screen time. It was just really not an option. And they've recently begun that. They find it's actually been helpful and that their son is in a better mood because of it.
What else do we know about adolescents and their development? Are they still looking for emotional security and approval from their parents?
Certainly, parents' approval does mean something. As children move more toward adolescence, the peer group takes on a larger role than it did, which I think also creates a challenge in the COVID times because the social distancing protocols people can struggle with. And if there's a desire to fit in and not want to stand out in a way that's different, or if we see everybody else not wearing masks in an indoor space and we feel like that's normal while they're doing it, then it can lead to some bad judgment, which can affect the whole family in terms of COVID transmission.
I guess there's no one clear pathway psychologically through all this.
I don't think we have any data in our lifetime that really shows how this is going to play out. The best we can do for our kids is to try to keep a sense of calm, try to be positive, try to be happy with where we are and what we have in life. But if we're taking things that we don't have control over and getting kind of stressed out about it over time, that leads to us giving up and trying to make things better. And it also can lead to an increase in depressive feeling.
Any parting words?
Be strong, everybody. You are the number one resource for your kids in terms of being great role models. Wait this out, and it's going to get better.
Charles Goldstein has contributed to many scholarly journals, including Child and Behavior Therapy. He was speaking to VOA's Adam Phillips. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. And until next time, I'm Steve Miller.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Prote Impiranya, the former commander of the Presidential Guard of the Rwandan Army, is wanted for taking part in the 1994 genocide in Rwanda. In April 1994, as violent Rwandan extremists were launching a bloody campaign of ethnic cleansing, Impiranya led the Presidential Guard battalion. He's accused of playing a key role in planning the genocide, including training military groups and distributing weapons. The Presidential Guard, under Impiranya's command, is accused of assassinating Prime Minister Aga Uwilingiyimana and 10 Belgian peacekeepers detailed as her bodyguards. Throughout the genocide, the Presidential Guard was reportedly a major driving force of lawlessness and destruction. For these and other crimes, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, now known as the International Residual Mechanism for Criminal Tribunals, indicted Impiranya on charges of genocide and war crimes and issued warrants for his arrest. The United States is cooperating with other governments, the United Nations, and the Residual Mechanism to make it harder for Impiranya and others sought for the killing to continue to elude justice. To achieve that end, the U.S. is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to his arrest. If you or anyone you know has information on Prote Impiranya's activities and whereabouts, you can provide it with complete confidentiality. Please visit the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate website to contact the Regional Security Office. Email the U.S. War Crimes Rewards Program at wcrp@state.gov or contact us via WhatsApp on +1 202 975 5468. You can also visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/war crimes rewards program or follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/war crimes reward for photos of the wanted fugitives. All credible reports will be investigated, and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.